This is Radio Influence.
Got him in the white trunks. He heard it.
Beautiful.
Oh, God.
That's beautiful. He's got it.
And he forced the top.
Wow.
And here's the intermission. And it's all over. It's
nice.
All over. First round knockout.
Big
is how Rich Franklin retains his belt.
The one thing that I never thought in a million years would happen, happened.
The champion. The challenger. Here we go.
This is the MMA Report with Jason Floyd on Radio Influence.
Josh Koscheck's Bellator debut is set to take place later on this month. Ian McCall once again hit with bad luck, but hey, he's got an opponent, a new opponent for UFC 208, and the main event for UFC Fight Night 107 in London has been announced by the UFC. Welcome into the MMA Report podcast right here on Radio Influence. I am Jason Floyd of the MMAReport.com, along about talking about those news stories and some other news stories that have happened over the past couple of days. We're going to have five interviews for you here on the podcast. We're going to talk to fellow MMA reporter Mike Russell, who broke some news on Tuesday about the World Series of Fighting and some new owners, as that organization has reportedly been sold for $25 million for 60% stake. So we'll talk to Mike about that. Also, talk about some other things going on in the MMA industry. Also, we're going to be joined by Adam Milstead, who's going to be in the feature preliminary bout on Saturday night of UFC Fight Night 104, as he is going to take on Curtis Blaydes in a heavyweight matchup. A little bit of an interesting fight booking there by the UFC. Two rising prospects in the heavyweight division, but a nice matchup there. So we'll talk to Adam about his fight on Saturday against Curtis Blaydes. And we'll be joined by two fighters that are going to be fighting on Thursday night at Tachi Palace Fights 30. You'll hear from Anthony Cachahone and also Alex Perez. We'll talk to both those guys about their matchups here at Tachi Palace Fights 30. And also, we'll be joined by Andres Quintana, who's going to be stepping into the Combat Days America's cage later on this month. We'll talk to him about his matchup coming up. Also talk to him about what happened at his Hard Knocks fight last year that ultimately did not take place. But before we get into everything going on in the world of MMA, I want to let you know about my sponsor, Fight TV. Fight is the go-to app for MMA fans and practitioners. Live pay-per-views, TV tapings, full-length matches, interviews, movies, and documentaries. Fight is your number one source for MMA, boxing, and pro wrestling video. Live stream free and premium MMA, pro wrestling, and boxing on the screen of your choice, phone, tablet, or TV, using just the Fight app. Download Fight free today by going to fight.tv/radioinfluence/. Once again, that is fight.tv/radioinfluence/. That link is available on radioinfluence.com. But I led off the show talking about Josh Koscheck. Of course, we all remember signed with Bellator, and then he was supposed to take on Paul Daly in London last year. Ultimately, that fight did not take place, and a lot of people kind of felt that maybe we would never see Josh Koscheck inside that Bellator cage, but it was announced on Tuesday that Josh Koscheck will be a part of the main card of Bellator 172 later on this month, Saturday, February 18th, as he is going to take on Marcel Alonso in a welterweight matchup. Bellator announced that in a press release on Tuesday, and that was not the only matchup that they happened to announce. They also announced that the lightweight matchup between Adam Piccolotti and Brent Primus that was previously scheduled for this fight card has been scratched after Adam Piccolotti was forced to withdraw from the fight due to an undisclosed injury. So Brent Primus no longer on this fight card. That was really a matchup that I was personally very interested in seeing two lightweight prospects. Of course, it was announced last Friday night that the co-main event is going to be Josh Thompson and Patrycki Pitbull, which raises the question, what's going to happen next for Michael Chandler? And, you know, it's kind of an interesting what Bellator is doing there, because if Michael Chandler, if Josh Thompson loses that fight, what do you do there at 155? You know, I'm really not sure what they're going to do there. You know, I got asked by some fans if Michael Chandler was injured, haven't heard anything along those lines, but Of course, Bellator 172, headlined by Fedor Emelianenko and Matt Mitrione. I talked about this on the most recent post-fight podcast, and obviously we'll talk about this leading up to this fight. I really like Matt Mitrione in that fight. I think that Matt's going to win that fight. I think this is going to be a little bit of a showcase fight. It'll be interesting as, you know, Matt, you know, admitted last week that he's only on a 4-fight deal with Bellator. So that deal, you know, third fight here in Bellator. So we'll see what happens there with Matt Mitrione. Of course, also on that main card, you got Czech Congo and Ole Thompson, and of course the preliminary card pretty much filled with local fighters there from California. So really looking forward to Bellator 172 coming up later on this month. Also, I mentioned beginning of the show, the main event of UFC Fight Night 107 in London is now set. It is Corey Anderson versus Jimmy Manoah. This is a fight that was previously announced for this fight card, now the main event. Sounds like they were trying to maybe get Alexander Gustafsson to headline this fight card. That did not take place. And, you know, I had people ask me, said, well, what do you think about this being the main event? And with this being a Fight Pass card, I'm not really surprised that ultimately Jimmy Manoah and Corey Anderson ended up being the main event of the evening. I kind of feel like, you know, this is you know, really a fight to kind of see where are these guys going to go. Are they going to take that next step, or are they going to kind of come back down? I mean, I think for Jimmy Manoah, he, you know, he wanted some bigger fights. This is not the type of fight that he was looking for, but we'll see what goes on there for Jimmy Manoah. And of course, also mentioned the bad luck for Ian McCall continued, as it was on Sunday. Neil Siri announced on his Facebook page that he was out of UFC 208 due to a family situation, and the UFC has turned to Jared Brooks, an undefeated fighter out of the Midwest, to take on Ian McCall. Not an easy fight here for Ian McCall. And, you know, when Neil pulled out of this fight, you know, there was people, Lewis Gadno was petitioning for this fight on social media. I thought that would have been a good replacement fighter to come in. Also, I saw Copio asking about Shorty Torres, another fighter that, you know, I think it's, you know, probably, while he's only got 4 professional fights, when you go out there and you do what he did to Pedro Nobre, that clearly has gotten the attention of the UFC, and I think that Shorty will be in the UFC in the very near future. I don't know how quick it's going to be. You know, he might have to have another fight or two maybe before the UFC brings him in at 4-0, but ultimately, is Shorty Torres ready for the UFC? He might be ready for the UFC, but really, ultimately, the people that have to make that decision for Shorty Torres has got to be his coaches around him, you know, because, you know, it's hard getting to the UFC, but you don't want to get to the UFC too early. You know, lose a couple of fights, and then now getting back to the UFC after being in the UFC sometime is just as tough. But, you know, Ian McCall has gone through a lot. Of course, we had him on the podcast last week talking about everything that he has been through, and, you know, really, you know, and I've said this with Ian McCall. I truly believe, I think, you know, Ian said that he believes he's 3 fights away from a title shot, and he thinks that if he goes out there and gets 3 finishes, that he would be right there in line for a title shot. I kind of think that if he goes out there and he destroys Jared Brooks, it would not surprise me if the UFC says, you know what, Ian, we're putting you right in there with Demetrius Johnson, because, you know, really, I think that in terms of rematches for Demetrius Johnson, Ian McCall is that one guy that fans look at, so only time is going to tell maybe if the UFC does decide to go that route with Ian McCall in terms of, but ultimately the key is Ian's got to get active. He's got to get in there. It was January of 2015, the last time we have seen Ian McCall in the UFC octagon, which was a loss there to John Lineker. But, you know, UFC 208 is next week, a card that is rapidly approaching. And, you know, look, I've sat there, and I don't think it's a great pay-per-view lineup, and we'll see ultimately how this pay-per-view does perform, you know, and you think, you hope that ultimately it just goes out there and ends up being a stellar fight card. But when you look at this fight card, you know, the first thing you look at is, you know, you've got the main event of Holly Holm and Jermaine Day or Monda May, and, you know, ultimately we'll see what happens in terms of the women's 145-pound title, of how the UFC kind of handles that going forward. You know, a lot of that really does depend on what's going to happen with Chris Cyborg and her issues with USADA. Of course, you also have Anderson Silva and Derek Brunson. I think you look at Anderson Silva, I mean, you know, if he can go out there and get a win, I think that, you know, he puts himself right there in line for, you know, a potential rematch with Michael Bisping. I think there's some guys that obviously are in front of him, Yoel Romero, Jacare Souza, but there is a little bit of a storyline there with Arisola, but a huge opportunity there for Derek Brunson. Also, you have Jacare Souza on this card as he is going to be taking on Tim Bocha. Glover Share against Jared Conner. That's really a matchup that does have me interested. You know, Jared coming off a devastating win in his last fight, but said that, you know, he was, it's a guy who fought a heavyweight, moved down to 205, was even talking about going down to 185. A huge step up in competition for him. This is one of those odd matchups that the UFC has booked recently, but if Jared Conner can get a win over Glover Share, who knows, maybe you got another contender there at 205 pounds. You also have Dustin Poirier and Jim Miller, a lightweight matchup. Really looking forward to that. That Nick Lentz Islam Makhachev fight's another fight that definitely has me interested. We had Rick Glenn on the podcast last week, who's taking on Philippe Nover. So looking forward to seeing those matchups, but not exactly the great pay-per-view lineup that you would hope to see there in terms of putting out $60 there. We'll see how it goes there. By the way, last week, it was announced late last week on Wednesday night that the main event of UFC 210 will be a rematch, as Daniel Cormier is going to defend the light heavyweight title against Anthony Rumble Johnson. And Rumble Johnson on the MMA Hour on Monday announced that no longer represented by Glenn Robinson, now represented by Ali Abdelaziz. Of course, everyone knows what's going down there in South Florida. The Black Zillions, the Jocko Hybrid Center where they're training, no longer there. A lot of those fighters have moved over to the Combat Club under Henry Hoof. And what was really interesting is Rumble in that interview said training at two different places. Ariel asked him who's going to be in his corner. And it was interesting to hear that Neil Melanson is going to be in his corner. And Neil, one of those coaches that Glenn Robinson brought into the Black Zillions, and a lot of guys down there credit Neil Melanson what he has been able to do. Some other fight bookings to mention here. UFC Fight Night 106, Kevin Lee against Francisco Trinaldo has been booked. Also, at UFC 210, there was some rumblings that maybe it's Joanna Jędrzejczyk versus Michelle Waterson is going to be the co-main event of that fight card. All indications are that Michelle Waterson is not getting a title matchup. I really do believe if Jessica Andrade wins on Saturday night, Jessica Andrade will be next for Joanna Jędrzejczyk. Now, how quick of a turnaround it could be for Jessica Andrade, who knows? But I think that's probably the route you're going to see the UFC go for, in the interim with Joanna Jędrzejczyk. Of course, November coming off her last title defense. Now, one of the major news stories that came out this week, came out on Tuesday, was the World Series of Fighting, and as 60% of that company has been sold. And this is a story that Mike Russell has been all over. And I had a chance on Tuesday evening to talk to Mike Russell. We talked about what is going on here. We had a lengthy conversation pretty much entirely about the World Series of Fighting. And, I kind of just started this interview off by going, why does somebody think 60% of the World Series of Fighting is worth $25 million? All right, joining me now here on the MMA Report on Radio Influence, a man that when it comes to news on the business side of the World Series of Fighting, he is the guy to go to, Mike Russell. Of course, you can follow Mike on Twitter at MikeRussellMMA, his website, RealFightStories.com. Mike, it was, I guess, a couple of weeks ago that you had started putting some stuff out there, and there were people, denying the fact. And then, Paul Giff had a story, and I remember seeing Ray Sefo, tweeting at Bloody Elbow, we're not going anywhere, which didn't really exactly deny that potentially there's an ownership change here. But it was on Tuesday. I saw it Tuesday morning where you put it out there, that the SEC filing for the World Series of Fighting's new investment group, 31 backers reportedly raised $25 million for 60% of the company. And my first thought is, who the hell thinks 60% of the World Series of Fighting is worth $25
million? Yeah, I don't get it. I'm looking through, unless there's some kind of assets that we don't know about, which I don't think they even have very many assets, because if you recall, back when we were looking at some of those filings, that court filings that Paul Giff went through and John Nash went through, there was some talk about how the video catalog was in play in some of the lawsuits. So I'm told that the video catalog, the back catalog, is actually owned by the owners of World Series of Fighting Global. So I don't know, man. What do you see the value? We've got potentially four or five champs leaving. are gone, you know, as far as the rumor mill goes and some of the posters and stuff that have come out. It's one of those things that, to me, it doesn't look like it's money very well spent.
I mean, this is my thing when it comes to the World Series of Fighting and some of their champions. And what you're mentioning, we're talking, you know, Justin Gaethje, Mal Moraes, David Branch. You know, to me, when it comes to the bottom line, and I'm the business guy, I'm looking at the bottom line of making money. Out of those three fighters, the one fighter you'd want is Justin Gaethje because this guy's must-watch television. There's Justin Gaethje's fighting, you're going to tune in. Mal Moraes is fighting, David Branch is fighting. People aren't going out of their way to watch those two guys fight. Very talented fighters, no question about it, but people aren't going out of their way. That's what I would always look at when you see when the salaries were released and you look at the amount of money that they were paying, you know, Marlon Moraes and David Branch. The business side of me said, how are you making money on these guys when, you know, unless that television deal has changed recently, it's a, you know, basically there's not really money to exchange hands. Just NBC pays the production cost of the shows, which, I mean, look, can be very expensive, by the way. You know, so you look at, okay, how are they making money? But then I look at the only way I could justify that you think the World Series of Fighting has value is if you know all of their shows are going on NBC and not NBCSN. Because on NBCSN, realistically, you're going to bring in 150,000 viewers to 230,000 viewers, pretty much. I mean, you might have a show here and there. I mean, last year they had one show that did 250,000 viewers on NBCSN. They only had one show in the entire history of the promotion that drew more than 300,000 viewers on NBCSN. So you sit there and go, there's not much ad revenue you can get there. It's just, unless they know they're going to be on NBC every time, that's the only way you could justify people putting an investment into this organization once again, because this isn't the first time this promotion's had an influx of money come into it.
No, and the thing about this deal in particular, I think, is who's involved. And I think that's one of the things. When we start hearing more who these 31 people are, one of the names that we've heard is Ted Leonsis, who is one of the owners of the Washington Wizards, Washington Capitals. You know, his son is apparently going to be involved with everything that's going on here. So who knows? You know, I think maybe they think they can turn things around, but I don't know that any of these guys are real MMA guys like us, where they kind of know, you know, have their finger on the pulse of everything. They don't know how damaged the brand is. And you know what? Losing all these champions at once, to me, it looks like it was just a cash dump. Because if you look at, you know, even the three names that you named, Moraes, Gaethje, and Branch, they were making $200,000 a fight. So, you know, I don't know how you could maintain, especially with every one of those guys on the last card, I don't know how you could keep going at that pace of salaries going in and money not coming back in. Or sorry, salaries going out and money not coming back in. But I don't know. I think that that's what they're trying to bank on here. But I'm skeptical just because I've seen, you know, the same thing happen with the IFL. You know, we had these people come in and think they were going to change the face of the sport. The problem is now they've got, they're basically starting behind the starting line, because they're going to have to change a lot of MMA fans' minds before they can actually do something with the brand where they bring, you know, eyes outside of that MMA sphere. So, you know, I think Bellator is doing it well now by bringing in, you know, some of these, I guess, what people call freak show fights. I don't know what World Series of Fighting can do to bring, you know, the return on investment. I think was just that the $20 million was going to what Dyfik had put in, and I think I've heard that it's been more than $20 million that he's put in over the years. So I heard that's where he's getting his money back, basically, and the other $5 million is going to pay off the investors. But I've also heard that he's had to set some money aside because they do assume that they're going to have to pay off some of these lawsuits that are coming. So, you know, again, you're buying that part of the problem, because the money that he's set aside, it might be astronomically more that he's going to have to pay out. It's, you know, I just think there's a lot of negative aspects to this that weren't looked into. And to me, it just, I don't know, you know, best of luck with everything, but I'm going to have to stay skeptical.
Yeah. I mean, in, you know, the SEC filing out there, you know, the names that are listed on there, they all have residence in Virginia. So, you know, maybe they're looking at making this an East Coast property as opposed to the West Coast property that has been since World Series of Fighting came around back in, what, 2011, 2012. And you mentioned there are some power players there on the sporting side, which, you know, makes me wonder when you have, you know, the owner of the Wizards and the Capitals, you know, maybe how much of this is maybe putting some fights that are in his venue. You know, and I think the World Series of Fighting, what they have to do is they've got to convince managers that they are a promotion where you want your fighter to go. I mean, I've talked to several managers, and the one thing that the sentiment I continue to get is they don't seem comfortable in putting their guys in an exclusive contract with the World Series of Fighting because, you know, there's a question of, A, how many events are they going to put on in a calendar year? And B, if your guy happens to be a solid ticket seller in a region, would the World Series of Fighting only use your fighter in that region? That is a problem Bellator has really started to run into there, especially in the Northeast, where Northeast fighters, I think at one time they're like, oh man, it's awesome to be on the Bellator card. Yeah, maybe I'm on the preliminary card, but I can make good money. But then they started to realize, like, okay, I'm only going to sign a one-fight deal because if I sign a multi-fight deal, I'm pretty much only fighting two times a year at Mohegan.
Yeah, yeah. And you know what? I think part of the deal, too, if you look a little bit deeper into it, that guy, Ted Leonassis, who's the owner of both of those sports franchises, he also is, you know, owns some interest in NBC. So, you know, NBC and NBC Sports. So I think if that's, you know, part of the deal is that they've got their hooks in, you know, deep on this television deal. They've also got a network that they use for sending out all their basketball and hockey feeds that are kind of off when it's an off night and there's no television broadcast. So, who knows? Maybe they're promising that they're going to use all these different technologies and all these different outlets to try to build it. But again, I don't think people realize that MMA has been, you know, as far as popularity goes, it's been kind of on a downswing lately.
Oh no, you don't got to tell me that.
It's amazing.
We just look at the UFC, and I use this. You know, I've talked about this here on this podcast for multiple weeks. Go tell me the fight that has been booked or will be booked in the next 4 to 5 months that gets you excited. And not just gets MMA fans. Like, because you can look at UFC 209 and say, yeah, I mean, of course you're all giddy about Woodley Thompson, the rematch, and Khabib and Ferguson. While those are two great fights, they're not going to be huge sellers when it comes to pay-per-view. That's just being honest about it, even though they're two great fights. In terms of bringing that casual MMA, that sports fan to the product, go find me the fight that's going to get people interested. And I think in terms of the World Series of Fighting, I think that's where they struggle is, you know, still the going on New Year's Eve. I understand why they did it as a company. Hey, it's a chance for us to be on NBC. We have to take advantage of this opportunity. However, you know, I don't know if you've gotten the same sentiment from people in the industry, but I've gotten this feedback from people that there was very much a bad taste in people's mouth that they kept trying to say they were at Madison Square Garden. No, they were at the theater at Madison Square Garden, which is two totally different things. We're talking about, you know, a 5,000 seat venue as opposed to a 15 or 20,000 seat venue. And that's where I think it rubbed a lot of people in the industry the wrong way. But I understand from a business aspect why they did it. But they also, what is the fight they have that is going to draw viewers to them?
Well, look at the next card. You know, look, the Harrison fight, I'd rather watch that fight than I think the Sean Jordan fight. You know, I guess it depends on your taste, right?
You know, I understand that why you want to have the heavyweight fight as a main event. I get it. Yeah. But to me, as a MMA reporter and as an MMA fan, the fight that has me the most interested is that featherweight matchup between Andre Harrison and Lance Palmer. You know, Andre is a guy that, I mean, look, for a long time now, he's had a stigma to him about, hey, this is a decision machine. You know, and I thought going the World Series of Fighting was a very smart move by himself and his management. You know, he goes in there, gets a stoppage victory in his first fight, and, of course, the Palmer fight was the fight to make. You know, Sean Jordan's got the name from the UFC, but I think in terms of fight quality, Harrison Palmer's the best one. And I know you put the poster out there, you know, the bantamweight title fight, which I think the one thing I look at the World Series of Fighting, I kind of feel like they should maybe look at, you know, only a couple weight classes and really develop those weight classes before, you know, going, you know, I mean, look, Bellator's number two promotion in the world, and they're having trouble at 135.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, look at, we got Kayla Harrison. Who's she going to fight when she's ready to go? You know, unless they build the whole female 145 division ever, around,
I mean,
her.
Like, the last time I think they've done a women's fight was Jessica Aguilar.
And we saw what happened with her. She sat out so long that, you know, finally I think they released her, but it was only because I think at the time it was they just couldn't find her fights because they weren't willing to put the time or the money in.
Yeah, I mean, I get why you bring Harrison in. I mean, I understand why that is, but it's kind of like I correlate this to what Bellator is doing at women's 145 pounds. Are you developing a division or are you doing one-off fights? And you can look at World Series of Fighting, and I mean, let's be honest about it. When it came to men's bantamweight, they were doing one-off fights. There wasn't developing a division. It was all about, you know, finding Marlon Moraes, you know, a suitable opponent. I mean, I think Marlon Moraes is an extremely talented fighter. He is, I think, no question, he has top 10 talent. But I can't rank him in the top 10 because of his resume. I mean, yes, he's got all these wins, but who's the best win against? And is that fighter even top 30 in the world? You know, that's why, I mean, look, I think it's only a matter of time before we likely hear Marlon Moraes is in the UFC. I don't think Bellator would make a run. I think that I'll be interested whenever Marlon's first fight in the UFC happens. I'll be interested to see what the disclosed pay for that is, because I personally can't see the UFC going more than 40 and 40.
No. No, they're not going 200,000. And the other thing is, he has a lot of you know, sponsors that he brings into the cage with him. So when he goes UFC and gets the bottom rung of the UFC Reebok deal, then, you know, he's going to notice that it's going to take a big chunk out of his pocket. But I don't know. I see, you know, if he does sign, I can't see him again. You know, he doesn't have the name value of like when Overeem came over, or like came over, or like one of these guys that everybody was salivating over. You know, World Series of Fighting fans and big time MMA fans know who he is. UFC fans have never really heard of him.
Yeah, I use the analogy, the sports bar reference. Yep. Go into a sports bar on, let's just say this Saturday night for the UFC event in Houston. You go to your local sports bar, wherever you live, and go in there and say, and just walk around the bar and say, you know, pull out, you know, five fighters' names and say, which check mark, which one do you know? And Marlon Moraes is one of those five fighters. It's probably going to be a very low percentage that probably knows who he is. And that's it's just the way it is in this industry. Is MMA is so defined by those three letters, the UFC, that it is kind of tough for guys outside the UFC to get name recognition.
Yeah. Yeah. I see. You know what? You say the same thing about, you could say the same thing about Branch the last couple of years. You know, he had some big wins a few years ago, and you know what, he beat Vinny Magalesh, but Vinny Magalesh was kind of on a downswing as well in his career at that point. And I've heard he's retired since then. So, you know, I don't see him being this killer at 185 in the UFC when you've got, you know, some of these guys are legitimate killers.
If I was Bellator, I would try to get I'd try to bring in David Branch.
Yeah.
I mean, because I mean, I could see the UFC, you know, bring him in. I mean, and I mean, it's not like there's going to be a bidding war for David Branch, but I could see Bellator, because I mean, look, 185 is a very tough division to go out and find talent in. But the problem with David Branch and the way Bellator is going to look at it is, can David Branch bring viewers with him? And the answer to that's no. You know, and it's just, but there's, I mean, let's be honest, there's very few fighters that can really move the needle that are outside the UFC, and especially in the world. I mean, World Series of Fighting, to me, there's only one guy that I would label as a guy who could potentially move that needle, and that's Justin Gaethje, because his fighting style is so damn exciting. And you know what? I mean, you know, and he was on his way to losing, you know, against Firmino back on the New York City show before, you know, the doctor ultimately comes in and stopped the fight. I mean, it's one of those things where you watch Justin Gaethje – he's a hell of a fire, exciting fire, but you kind of go, I don't think he's long for this sport because of his fighting style. And
yeah,
sometimes blocking punches with your face is not exactly leads to longevity in this sport.
No, no. Taking two to get one isn't a way that you'd stay around. Look at guys like Marcus Davis.
Yeah.
You look at guys that didn't really make it that long just because of how, you know, durable they thought they were. But your chin starts to wear down.
I think that when you think about chins going down, the name that always comes to my mind is Chuck Liddell.
Oh, yeah.
Chuck was not the same fighter after he lost to Rampage.
No. What's funny is – sorry, go ahead.
He just went downhill from there. I mean, I think about the fight he had against Rich Franklin. If that fight was before he'd fought Rampage, he walks through those punches. But his chin was shot and – you know, Rich ultimately gets the win.
Yeah, and then they make him, you know, what was his position with the UFC where he was supposed to be the guy that guys could talk to if they were having issues? And I'll never forget him telling fighters that they should just stand and bang like him to make an exciting fight. Sometimes his words weren't coming to him as well as they should have been when he was saying these things.
Yeah, it's very interesting to see that Forrest Griffin's the only guy that has retained a job with the UFC, you know, that was, you know, an ex-fighter that was, you know, it was, you know, Chuck and Matt and Forrest. And Forrest is the one guy that actually has stuck around. I guess also living in Vegas probably helps him out a lot there, too, in terms of that new performance facility that the UFC has there. But, I've always said this. I want to see the World Series of Fighting succeed. But from a business side, I look at what they have done, and I don't see how you think they're all of a sudden going to turn it around. I'm just wondering, has anybody yet apologized to you for having the story right?
No. You know what? I'll admit that I had a few of my little details wrong, but it was. A lot of this ownership group is made up from Revolution executives. That was the one detail I had wrong, and the $5 million I had a little bit off. But the $5 million was the actual price of buying out the rest of the investors. So 60%, basically, these guys are getting that they're only paying these investors off that own, you know, a majority share at that point for $5 million.
A lot of
these guys have put in a lot more than $5 million. I'll bet you.
Yeah, I had to laugh the other day when you had the tweet where you just screenshotted. The people that Carlos Silva was following, you're like, yeah, you're not exactly playing a poker face here, Carlos.
No, I don't think they have anybody PR-wise, like, telling them at World Series of Fighting how to do, you know, how social media works that way. But, you know, pretty easy just to go through and find out who's following whom. And, it's interesting, though, because, are they going to bring in a new office to this? That's the part that I
think they're
going to
be a New York-based company.
Yeah. Yeah,
And I think that the signs have been on the wall about that. From the business side, you know, they got rid of Mike Aframowicz, who was doing PR. Which at that time, I was just like, "What is going on here? Why would you want to part ways?"
Mike does a good job.
And then they hired a New York firm, which I had some email correspondence with them, and they're like, "Yeah, yeah."
I think Greg Savage though took over for them, didn't he?
Greg was, he was not head of P. I mean, my understanding was he was just kind of helping out in a public relations mentality. It wasn't something like he was ahead. It just, you know, it sounded like that he was just kind of helping out. I'm sure that probably has a lot to do.
I think this firm, they didn't have very many contacts in the MMA sphere as well.
It seemed they were more like in the entertainment world. But the one thing the World Series of Fighting really struggles with is that media attention, you know, and how do you, a lot of MMA promotions see it. I mean, I remember the week of the New York City card, I was like, man, where is the interviews of these fighters out there? There just wasn't much out there. Then, you know, you hear John Fitch, he was on Sirius XM where he was like, is Tuesday a fight week? He didn't even know if he was fighting because of. You know, the issues he had with, you know, the brain scans he had, which, I mean, you hear that in the post-fight interview, you're going, oh, my God, what's going on here?
I know.
And you know, of course, we saw what happened with the UFC and Rashad Evans and that whole situation. And it's just, it's weird. It's the business side of MMA is very interesting right now because not just with what's going with the World Series of Fighting, I think the other thing is what's going currently with President Donald Trump and the banning of certain countries. Gegard Mousasi could be part of that, or maybe he's not going to be able to get to Buffalo for UFC 210. It's and I know people come to sports to get away from politics, but and I'm not someone who likes to talk politics. Anyone who's listening for a long time knows I'm not someone who sits there and talks about politics, but it's really damn tough this day to kind of separate yourself from all that when you're just watching sports.
Yeah. Yeah. And you know what? I'm finding that the big issue, and I don't know how much it's going to be an issue with World Series of Fighting, but like you look at WME, these are non-MMA people that came in and, you know, brought their entertainment kind of spin to the way that they thought things should be run. And, you know, everybody's kind of seen when they're letting employees go left, right, and center. And I don't know. It's one of those things that you wonder how long they're going to, because there's already been a lot of unrest. A lot of people are complaining about everything to do with a lot of these decisions that, you know, aren't really thinking of the fans or the sport or the fighters. And I don't know if they're going to lobby and pay as much money as they're paying and, you know, start using favors with Donald Trump to thwart all the efforts of all of these different union organizations and associations. You know, you got to start wondering whose interests they're actually in it for. I know obviously they want to make money, but if they're not really in the game of taking care of fighters, then fan unrest, you know, that with World Series of Fighting, I think that's one of the biggest things that has disappointed people and fans is when you see guys tweeting at World Series of Fighting that they're not being taken care of, or, you know, tweeting that an event is canceled, or you hear all of these different things that have happened and you're like, man, it doesn't seem like a professional organization.
Yeah. I mean, I think that, you know, they have to do something to get their promotion heading in the right direction. And I'm not quite sure exactly what, I don't think there's one step. There's probably multiple steps they have to take, but, you know, part of that is constantly putting on, you know, event after event. I mean, you remember what, you know, World Series of Fighting 35 was supposed to be sometime in the month of February, as I recall, like February 24th, February 25th, somewhere in there. Now it's, what's it, March 18th, I want to say?
Yeah, March 18th.
You know, yeah. And, you know, and that's going to be kind of sandwiched in between, you know, several MMA cards, between the UFC and Bellator. And, you know, it's just, I mean, I can just tell you as, you know, someone who does a podcast all the time and you know, does interviews, you're always going to put the UFC and Bellator over a World Series of Fighting interview. That's just the way it is, because that's what draws web traffic.
Yeah.
And it's also really weird to me to go on worldseriesoffighting.com and it's a bunch of UFC stories.
Yeah, that's strange. I just think it's because then they don't have to pay somebody to write as much as they do just to blog it. But, you know, one of the other problems, if you look at the bigger picture of everything, is you look at the last card that World Series of Fighting put on, which if you look at it and break it down, we know, like you said, we know what it was for. It was to entice these investors that, you know, to come and have a look at this grand spectacle that they put on. And they probably didn't spare too many expenses just for that fact that they wanted to, you know, make it look like everything was this fantastic organization. But like we heard the week of Fight Week, people were getting tickets given to them. And it was like, I don't know how many tickets were actually sold, because I've never gotten an answer back, and I don't think you've even gotten an answer back, have you?
No, I was the New York State Athletic Commission told me when I asked about paid attendance and comp tickets, they said ask the promotion. I was like, all right, there is no point in asking the World Series of Fighting, because they're not going to give you the real answer. And if I'm working for the World Series of Fighting and I have a reporter ask me the difference between paid and comps, there's no reason to give that information out, because you know there's way more comps that are worth paid tickets.
Mm-hmm. Big time. Big time. And that's the thing. So we see that event, then we see the next event. You know, it's a little bit underwhelming of an event. I know they've got a couple title fights. I know that they're looking at probably adding some more to it, but you think they'd want to come out with more of a bang, especially for the main event. Maybe that's why the actual poster hasn't been released by anybody but me, but I don't know. You'd think that you would want to set the stage and set the tone. This is the new face of World Series of Fighting, and I don't think that card's doing it for what it is.
What's going to be the bang for them? What fight are you going to put on there that's going to get people all giddy?
Nobody. They got to sign some people.
Lance Palmer, Andre Harrison's a great fight.
Yeah.
It's not going to get fans like, oh my God, I have to tune in on, you know, NBCSN to watch the World Series of Fighting fights. I mean, no. it's, you know.
Are we ever going to see a World Series of Fighting fighter on Dancing with the Stars? You know? That's the gauge, right?
Oh, how have, man, you made it?
If two, yeah, other fighters on there. So I don't know. Yeah, I don't know. It's an interesting, what a time to be alive.
Yeah, you want to see them succeed, you know, because it's another place for fighters to make a living, you know. But I think what they really need to do, and I thought they were doing this in 2016, was identifying markets where they can go in and do very well. It seemed like, you know, Everett Washington was becoming a really good market for them. You know, it looked like Memphis was potentially a good market for them. And the key with those is they're working with local promoters to put on the preliminary card, which that's what you need to do when you're a promotion not named the UFC. You've got to work with those local promoters. I don't, from a financial aspect, I don't get why they're all in on being in New York State, because it's just, from a financial aspect, it's very demanding on a promotion to put on a show in New York State currently.
Yeah, you know, very restrictive. Yeah.
And so I look at them and I say, to me, they got to find those markets where there's a great local fan base, where there's one local promoter who puts on incredible shows, is making money, and you team up with that promoter. And whether it's Everett Washington or whatnot, I mean, you know, there's, you know, like, you know, you can do shows in Las Vegas, but, you know, You have to find fighters that are not, that all would be from Las Vegas, that are not, you know, they came to Las Vegas to train. You know, it's like I look at the South Florida market. You know, people will go, oh, look, you got so many great teams down there. Yeah, that's true. You do have a lot of great, you know, fighting teams down there. However, 90% of those fighters aren't from South Florida, so they're not really ticket sellers.
Yeah. Well, you know, so maybe they'll bring them into the Washington arena, right? Or the Washington, you know, they've already got that in. If Leonsis is going to be running things,
Virginia, Maryland market is a good market.
Is that thriving? No. It's, I don't know. And that's the million-dollar question is going to be: how are these people going to do their market research? You know, I know that there's market research, but you can't gauge anything by what the UFC has done or what Bellator has done or what any of these other, you know, Strikeforce had done in the past, because World Series of Fighting is a totally different animal, right? They don't, like you said, they don't really have super strong divisions where you've got all these guys waiting in the wings to vie for all these titles. It's usually one or two guys that, you know, maybe the champ will rematch this guy because they don't have anybody else that they can fight two fights from now. So
and here's the problem with the World Series of Fighting. Let's just say Gaethje, Moraes, and Branch are all gone.
Yeah.
Who is the face of the World Series of Fighting?
I think they're banking on Harrison. It seems like they're all in. And you know what? It may be premature, but they're already talking about how she's training and she's getting ready and everything else. And I think that's – they're trying to use the Olympic angle. And I know Carlos Silva is a big Olympics guy, and, you know, he knows about how people can kind of use that as a cross-promotional tool. But I don't see
gamble.
It unless
– she. Gamble. Yeah. Now, if she becomes the next Ronda Rousey, but sure. – Ronda became Ronda because of the Zuffa PR machine.
Yeah.
You know, would Ronda have been the same Ronda if she was, if Strikeforce had never sold a Zuffa and she was just fighting in San Jose? I don't know.
Yeah.
She
could be like Marcelo Garcia. Everybody thought, you know, he was the next coming of Hoist. And don't get me wrong, there's no better jiu-jitsu player out there. There are some guys that are comparable. I still think Marcelo is one of the best, if not the best. But, you know, when he started in MMA, everybody thought he was going to take the MMA world by storm. But it's a different game when you get in there and you get in situations where you don't want to be in, you know, getting punched in the face. Everybody, what is it they say? Everybody's got a plan until they get punched in the face. But who knows? It's a huge gamble to kind of put all your eggs in that basket when she hasn't even fought once in MMA.
Yeah, I mean, it's You know, hopefully they succeed. But of course, you'll have updates on everything that's going on. Of course, people can follow you on Twitter at Mike Russell MMA. Also, you got Real Fight Stories. Anything we should be looking out on the horizon from you?
Not really, man. Just doing some stuff behind the scenes. Might have another chapter in me of the Ali Abdelaziz saga, depending on some investigations that are going on right now.
And we'll look forward to that. Mike, as always, I appreciate the time, and we'll talk soon, man.
Anytime, Jason. Thank you.
A ton of great stuff there from Mike Russell talking about what's going on with the World Series of Fighting. And as I stated multiple times throughout my conversation with Mike is, you know, look, I want to see the World Series of Fighting succeed, but, you know, time will tell. You know, I think if all their cards were going to be on NBC, I could see why someone would want to invest in that promotion. But when their card's on NBCSN, you kind of wonder. Of course, their next event is on Saturday, March 18th. Blagoy Ivanov versus Sean Jordan is going to headline that fight card. Of course, Sean Jordan coming over from the UFC. And, you know, Mike had that poster of what that card is going to be. That Andre Harrison, Lance Palmer fight, I think that's probably one of the best fights that the World Series of Fighting can put on. And, but I will say this, as we talked about in that interview or that conversation I had with Mike, it's really weird when you go to the World Series of Fighting website and you do see so much stories about the UFC. And look, I get that they're trying to do things to, you know, create web hits for themselves, but you know, it's going to be interesting to see what kind of happens with these new investors inside the World Series of Fighting and exactly how this promotion, you know, how does it take itself to the next level? Is, you know, every MMA personality, MMA reporter, fan, you want to see World Series of Fighting succeed because that is ultimately what is best for the sport of mixed martial arts because it's going to give fighters more options. But I can tell you this, I've talked to people in the management side that I think that there is a little concern maybe to send a fighter to the World Series of Fighting on a multi-fight deal because you just don't know about the future of that promotion. You know, I think they're very much open to one fight deals, but you know, it's ultimately the World Series of Fighting. They just got to prove to everyone, you know, that they can put on regular events. I mean, of course, their next card was initially scheduled to be in February. Now it's in March, and we'll see how well they do here. Is, you know, as a recording of this podcast, they've not officially come out and stated that there is a new investment into the promotion. But, you know, it's going to be interesting to kind of see how all of this plays out. And, you know, if Justin Gaethje, Marlon Moraes, and David Branch are not in the World Series of Fighting anymore, it's kind of interesting who does become the face of that promotion. Is it, you know, is it Lance Palmer or is it somebody else? You know, I think Justin Gaethje, I've always said, Justin Gaethje is must-watch TV. He is fighting. I am tuning in because this guy goes out there and puts on tremendous fights, fun fights for the fans. But the problem you do see with Justin Gaethje is long-term. You know, when you look at his fighting style, that's typically a fighting style that does not, you know, is not going to pan out to be a 10-year career. It's probably more like a 5 to 6 year career. But one of the most exciting fighters in the world, and I do expect that it's probably only a matter of time before we hear Marlon Moraes has signed with the UFC. I mean, a lot of people have pointed to maybe a potential matchup against Jimmy Rivera, and that fight makes a lot of sense. And I've talked a lot about Marlon Moraes on this podcast. I mean, look, this guy is an extremely talented fighter. There is no one that is doubting the talents of Marlon Moraes. This guy is an extremely talented fighter. But the question with Marlon Moraes is, where do you rank him in terms of 135ers? I think no doubt he has top 10 talent. But when you look at his resume, who is the best win? You know, and when you look at, you know, his World Series of Fighting run, which remember, he was a first fight was on the inaugural World Series of Fighting show. Is his best win a Miguel Torres? You know, is it a Josh Hill? Is it a Cody Bollinger? I mean, you look at Miguel Torres now. Miguel Torres is coming off a win back in September of last year, got a submission win over Lloyd Carter. But however, prior to that, he had lost back-to-back fights. And I mean, you got to think about when he had that fight against Marlon. I mean, it was a much different Miguel Torres, you know. So, but, you know, ultimately, the only way Marlon Moraes is going to prove that he is a top 10, top 5 bantamweight fighter is by getting into the UFC. And really, I think it's only a matter of time before we do see Marlon Moraes inside the UFC octagon. And, you know, I look forward to it. You know, obviously a great talent. David Branch, you know, I think is a guy you probably likely see back in the UFC. You know, at 185 pounds, every promotion is looking for 185. As I talked about in my conversation with Mike Russell, I think that David Branch would make a lot of sense if he was in Bellator, just based on what the Bellator 185-pound division is right now. It's a division that needs an influx of talent. You know, Ed Ruth is a guy that I think ultimately, as long as he continues this path as he is on, I think at some point he will be the Bellator middleweight champion, but they've got to add depth. And I think David Branch would be a guy that would add great depth to that Bellator 185-pound division, but ultimately I think he ends up in the UFC. And, you know, for Justin Gaethje, I mean, if I was the World Series of Fighting and I was going to invest a ton of money in one fighter, that one fighter would be Justin Gaethje. I mean, and I would basically try to make all of Justin Gaethje's fights on NBC and try to really spotlight him. But I do think we'll see Justin Gaethje inside the UFC. I mean, he's dropped hints over the years that that's where he wants to be. And, you know, for him to be, considered a top 155-pound fighter in the world, he's got to go over to the UFC if he wants to prove that. But Justin Gaethje, an incredibly talented fighter, I believe actually his contract technically ends this month with the World Series of Fighting. So, if all three of those fighters ultimately exit the World Series of Fighting, it's going to be very interesting to kind of see how that does play out there. But we'll see as time goes on. But, you know, I do want to talk about the MMA that is coming up this weekend. You have Tachi Palace Fights 30. That's on Thursday night. Saturday night, it's UFC Fight Night 104. Of course, this is a fight card taking place in Houston, Texas, at the Toyota Center there. The main card going to be on FS1 starting at 10 p.m. Eastern time. Prelims on FS1 at 8 p.m. Eastern time. And your Fight Pass prelims will be at 7 p.m. Eastern time. And, of course, this is a fight card that's all really about the main event here of Dennis Bermudez and Chan Sung Jung as the Korean Zombie returns to the UFC after his mandatory military service in South Korea. Also, this fight card, you got Alexis Grosso versus Felice Herrig. That's your co-main event. Abel Trujillo, James Vick, Ovin St. Preux, Volkan Oezdemir, Anthony Hamilton, Marcel Fortuna, and Jessica Andrade and Angela Hill will be your main card. Of course, myself and Daniel Galvan will have a preview podcast for this fight card. That will be coming out on Friday morning, so look forward to that. I will tell you, probably the one of the fights that has me the most interested is Adam Milstead and Curtis Blaze, two young heavyweights. A heavyweight matchup that, to me, is kind of odd. It's an odd matchup to me because you would think that you would almost keep these guys away from each other, kind of like what I think they're doing with Francis Ngannou and Derek Lewis, keeping them away from each other, and because potentially that's a top matchup for the UFC. But interesting matchmaking here with Adam Milstead, as I did have a chance to catch up with Adam Milstead last week as I talked to him about pretty much everything going on in his life. We talked about the matchup against Curtis Blaze. He even talked about that aspect of, hey, were you kind of surprised when you got this fight matchup? We also talked about his daytime job and so many other things. So here is my conversation with Adam Milstead. Joining me now here on the MMA Report on Radio Influence, man, it's going to be returning to the UFC Octagon coming up next Saturday night, Super Bowl Eve. Adam Milstead taking on Curtis Blaze in a heavyweight matchup. Adam, appreciate the time. It's been some time since we have seen you there back after your UFC debut. I got to ask, because there's an interview that you did with UFC.com where, you know, it shows you raise your hand. Shorts are all bloody. Did you keep the shorts as kind of like a little bit of a souvenir?
Oh, yeah, absolutely. It was every time, like, I would talk about a good fight to have, and a big bloody one would be cool to have, and, you know, just intrigues other people to watch it, and ended up being my first fight in UFC, and of course I had to keep the shorts regardless if it was bloody or not, but just adds to it. Now it's sitting in a shadow box at home.
When you think about that first fight, is it just, do you look at your opponent Cristela Rocha and go, man, I can't believe that a lot of those shots I was landing with just didn't finish the night?
Yeah, I was really surprised. In fact, I tell people all the time that it's not every day you go up against somebody and you throw everything you got into a punch and he's still standing there. So I was really surprised at his heart and his ability to take a punch. The dude's a tough guy. But when you get in the UFC, I guess that's something I need to expect and to kind of think about as I go further on in my career.
When this matchup was announced, I think one of the things that I jumped out to a lot of people who follow this sport on day in, day out basis is, I mean, it's two up and coming prospects. When you get this fight, they approach you, say, hey, you know, Curtis Blaze is going to be the opponent. Were you at all surprised that this was your next opponent?
A little bit. yeah, we're both kind of sitting at a position where we tend to be marketable and good prospects in the UFC. And so it was really surprising to see that they would put both of us up against each other right away. I don't know where that came from. There was a tweet that went out a while ago, and I think it got back to the new matchmaker. And I think he just saw an opportunity and ran with it. Regardless of the fact, you know, I'll fight anybody who wants to stand there and bang with me, who wants to just get in the cage and sign a contract, regardless of whoever it is. But when it comes down to it, and you're thinking on a business standpoint, it is a little surprising that they want to bring up two younger guys in a division to face each other. But we'll get in there and put on a show. That's the important thing. So.
It usually it seems like they would kind of keep you on, you know, different paths, and this fight would ultimately happen down the road. But it has been some time since your last fight, you know, end of May last year, and now to beginning of February. So what's been going on since that last fight, and was it something that you needed some time to recover from your UFC debut?
It wasn't necessarily anything I needed to recover from. Getting to the UFC was the hardest part, and it required a lot of I guess mental toughness, physical toughness. I mean, it required a lot from my body, and I beat it down so much to the point where I needed some time off. I got to the UFC, I got the contract. Now it's time that I need to start taking care of myself. And that's what I eventually did. And of course I have a full-time job, which in fact I'm at right now. If you know, you see a lot of the guys I'm working with right now, but, anyways, they, yeah, I had to take care of a lot of personal matters. My job comes first, unfortunately. Once that was taken care of, I had elbow surgery too. Made sure that was good to go, and I was confident enough to get in there and fight again with it. And so this is where it's led to now. And I was ready prior. I was ready still in 2016 near the end to go, but they ended up keep pushing the fight back. I think they just wanted to give us a decent stage to fight on.
There might be people watching our conversation at whatever point prior to your upcoming matchup and go, why does a UFC heavyweight have another job?
Because they don't pay enough. Unfortunately, we're the younger part of the division. A lot of people don't know who we are, so you can't really market us too much. There isn't a lot of money to gain from it. Yeah, I mean, you can make a decent chunk of change, you know, fighting at this lower division. But the problem is what you may at the most get three fights a year, and it's still nothing to really support yourself on. I've worked my way up from absolutely nothing, and I've gotten to this point now. I mean, I lived that life where I sacrificed so much to the point where I was just so hard to make ends meet. Now I have a job a really good job that supports me and takes care of me. I just bought a house, and so it's so many things that I'm blessed that I'm not willing to give up at this point in time unless I know for sure that the UFC is going to be there to take care of me. And unfortunately, even when you get to the higher parts of the UFC, if you start making a name for yourself, even then it's still difficult to actually support yourself off of that. And the tougher guys that you face, I mean, it's not like a stair. You don't just move up like this. It's whenever you win, you jump up a couple tiers on that ladder. And it's like, you really got to take some time off to really focus on training and getting better as a mixed martial artist. So when it comes down to it, yeah, the money's not there, but I always tell people when we get into sport, we don't get into it for the money. We get in for the pride chip and the competition.
You came in under the UFC under the old ownership group. Now, of course, it's a new ownership group. Is there anything for you being in the Adam Milstead business that you realize that under this new ownership group that maybe, you know, going out there and having great performance like you had in UFC debut is not enough, and that maybe you have to do other things to kind of get your name out there?
Yeah, it's something that doesn't help is the fact that I was on a fight pass prelim. Very few people tend to not have that app. I mean, which is good right now. We're actually going to be on TV. We're actually going to be where people who actually have cable can watch us. So I think that really kind of hurt me in a sense of getting people to notice me and to support me. But yeah, I mean, it's just one of those things. The further you go in a sport, the more that they'll market you, the more that they'll you know, help you out and push you in the right direction, so to speak. But it's all up in the air right now. And that's why it's still a little confusing that they put me and Curtis up against each other, because it's a any man's game at this point. This isn't a decisive win for either one of us. So it's a bit of a risk for both the UFC and our careers.
Mm-hmm. You know, Curtis, he's been in the UFC for a couple of fights here. And, you know, you had to stop a lot of takedown attempts in your fight against Chris, where he was trying to get fight to the ground. I think you stopped 88% of the takedown defense he had. Is kind of your thought with Curtis is, you know, yes, his fight's going to start on the feet, so you got to be ready for the striking ability. But is your kind of thought is, I don't know when, but it's going to happen. He's going to try to take me to the ground.
Oh yeah, absolutely. You can't be as tough as a wrestler as he is and not think that he's going to go to the ground. I mean, he's I think it was a junior national champion, which, you know, compared to a lot of the other competition and what we have to go up against doesn't say much, but when you got a guy who is as big as he is and still as athletic as he is, you have to think to yourself that he's going to use that strong point. And that's where his strong suit is wrestling. You know, as mixed martial artists, we're taught to, keep our opponents out of their safe zone, you know, basically take them out of their element. And as the fight's going on, I guarantee, especially if I start tagging them, which I have a lot more confidence in my striking than him actually hitting me. And I have a feeling he's definitely going to want to take it down to the ground as soon as probably 30, 40 seconds into the fight.
And, of course, it's going to be a part of UFC Fight Night 104 coming up next Saturday night, Super Bowl Eve. Of course, FS1 is where you can watch this fight card, watch these two heavyweights go to action here. And you always talk about things you want to prove in the fight. Is there anything you want to prove to yourself in terms of maybe something? Obviously, the win is the ultimate, you know, what you're trying to prove here. But is there anything else maybe to yourself that you're maybe has been a mindset in preparations for this fight?
Just not to have so much doubt on myself. I mean, there is a bit of when I first got that call and they said they wanted me to fight Curtis, he was one of the guys that I looked up to be probably one of the top 10 contenders here in the next year or so, just because of his athletic ability and his ability to be such a good wrestler inside the cage. And so when that came about, I had a lot of doubt on myself that I could win this fight, that I could pull through. But luckily, I got a great camp and I got a lot of good coaches. In fact, my one corner man's sitting right behind me, and he's been one of the biggest helps in trying to get me motivated and push in the right direction and get my mind right and just stop doubting myself and stop, you know, put so much pressure on myself. And just go out there and have fun. I mean, that's the most important thing, is to go out there, put on a show, and have fun. We're basically rock stars of these people. We get in there. We are the show. It's what the UFC pays us to do. They don't pay us to win. They don't pay us to win championships. They pay us to put on a show. And as long as that goes on, as long as we put on a great show and we make people want to watch us and watch the heavyweight division more, then I'll be happy with that, you know.
You mentioned about athleticism, and I know, you know, your first fight, that was kind of a something you heard a lot about in the commentary of the fight was your athleticism. Is there something maybe about this fight of, you know, maybe trying to prove that you're the more athletic heavyweight between you and Curtis?
Definitely, I want to be faster. So I'm going to do everything I can to be more agile than him. And, I definitely want to be. I want to be that guy that all the heavyweights say, this guy needs to drop down a light heavyweight. He doesn't need to fight us guys up here. You know, I want to be that guy. I want to be the fast guy. And I've been in that situation where I've dealt with faster fighters, and, you know, it's demoralizing when you go up against somebody who's, you know, taking angles on you and you can't, you're always a step behind them. That's the point I want to get to. That's what I want people to fear me for, is my speed, my agility, and of course, having the power to be able to finish the fight.
You mentioned about getting motivated. is motivation ever, is it ever, I mean, I know there's probably some mornings you're like, God, I don't want to get out of bed. I don't want to get to work. I don't want to get to the gym. But is it ever, you know, is it something that at any point in your career you've kind of had to deal with of just getting yourself motivated?
Yeah, just like you said, it's every morning. I mean, when I got to the UFC, of course, the motivation kind of came with it. You know, it's like, boom, I'm here. Okay, let's see how far I can go. And then it really felt like everything kind of came into place, and everything that I've gone through in my past was worth it. You know, the times, the misery, the eviction notices on my door, the bills passed due and collections, all that stuff. You know, when I came down to it, I had the motivation to really push forward and do everything I can to be the best. But, when you're in camp, and especially doing what I do, and I had to come back to the office out of the field so I can come back and, you know, jump on. But right after this, we're going back out again, and it's difficult. I get up, 5:30 in the morning. I come here to work. I work from 7 to 3, sometimes 7 at night, 8 at night. Depending on what type of job we're on. And then I got to jump out of here, go home, grab all my stuff, go to the gym, train for 2 to 3, 4 hours at a night, go home, get 4 hours of sleep, and get back up and do it all over again. It's miserable. You go home, you don't have enough time to cook yourself a decent meal. So you have to run through a drive-through to, and get some crappy fast food just so you have some sort of calories in you to help your body recover. You're get up in the morning and you can't walk. So you crawl to the shower and you jump in the shower and you sit there until the water's ice cold, hoping that your body will recover and you can actually get up and walk and get dressed and go to work and do this all over again. And doing it for, 2-3 months solid straight, it's so demoralizing and it's so painstaking. A lot of people don't ever see that. They just see who we are inside the cage. They just see the fight. They just, if it was just about fighting, fantastic, but it's not. And if you want to be the best, this is what you have to go through. And one of the hardest things is finding that motivation to wake up in the morning and do things that aren't even going to help your career, like in the mixed martial arts, going to a job like this. I mean, the only thing this job is doing is keeping my mindset straight that I don't have to come home to eviction notices and bills being thrown in collections and stuff like that. Other than that, it's hard to gain that motivation. But, as long as you surround yourself with people who care about you and push you in the right direction, you'll find motivation through others.
I remember, prior to you got UFC, we had talked a couple of times. You were just kind of waiting for that opportunity. Anybody you train with that we need to keep our eyes out on?
Well, as far as, I work with a lot of great fighters in the area. And of course, everybody knows that I work with Stipe, and he's a great guy. He's one of those guys who'll beat you up in a cage and pull you aside to tell you, what you did wrong. If anything, everybody needs to be looking out for Stipe in hopes that maybe, that they start recognizing this guy more than just being a brute inside the cage. Mm-hmm. Maybe he'll start getting, more motivation. Maybe he'll start making a little bit more money in his fights instead of like Overeem coming in and getting twice as much as he did to lose a fight, And so, there's a couple guys in the Pittsburgh area that are moving up. It's just it's a hard road to follow, and it really is just a chance. It's a risk that we take in hopes to maybe make it to the big show. So.
I think
a lot of people who follow me on Facebook, mm-hmm. they'll see the guys that I work with, and they'll say that they're all beasts in this area. And a lot of people don't really recognize Pittsburgh to being a big mixed martial arts town, but we have some of the best MMA communities around in the country. You got Ohio is one of the biggest mixed martial arts states in the nation. So.
Yeah, I think when I think of that Pittsburgh scene, I think of Mark Cherico, Dominic Mazzotta. Mm-hmm. I think those two guys, I think we're both kind of sitting there going, at some point, both those guys, they just keep winning. And I think they're going to get those opportunities soon.
One of these guys has to go to the UFC, if not both of them. I mean, they're both out of, different weight classes, but they're both stacking up, decent amount of fights and wins. And it's just, Don Mazzano's only loss was to the bantamweight champion of the world right now.
Yeah.
And so it's like, why don't you look at these guys? We got some of the best wrestlers in the world, but at the same time, we got, you know, great strikers, great mixed martial artists, people that know how to put on a show and mix it up. And I think that's what the UFC really needs to start looking towards, is finding guys who are going to be that potential to make it to the next level, but at the same time put on that show. I mean, that's what the UFC needs. That's what they want.
Final thing, Adam, and I really do appreciate the time. This Saturday, you've got a heavyweight matchup on the main card, Arlovski and Njuanu. How much are you paying attention to that fight as maybe a future opponent?
I'm definitely paying attention. We're going to be watching it for sure. We kind of, as far as my team goes, we want Arlovski to win. I was a big fan of Arlovski for a really long time. But on paper, and you're looking at Francis, like, this guy's nasty, you know, and he's so young. But, yeah, we'll see what happens. You know? So we'll be watching for sure. And as far as a potential opponent, maybe we'll get one or two before we get up to that level.
But, of course, your fight is coming up next Saturday, UFC Fight Night 104. Of course, you'll be able to see Adam fight Curtis Blaydes on FS1. Adam, as always, I appreciate the time and good luck next week.
Hey, thank you so much.
And there you have my conversation with Adam Milstead. I appreciate Adam taking some time out last week to talk to me about his fight coming up on Saturday at UFC Fight Night 104, the feature preliminary bout on FS1. Of course, that four-fight televised preliminary card will begin at 8 p.m. Eastern Time, 5 p.m. Pacific Time. You know, one of those matchups on this fight card that I think really hasn't gotten a lot of talk about would be Tisha Torres versus Beck Rawlings. You know, interesting matchup there at 115 pounds. So interesting to see those two ladies go in there and battle it out there. But really, in terms of the preliminary card, the matchup to pay attention to is Adam Milstead and Curtis Blaydes. As I said before, I played that conversation with Adam, which, by the way, if you want to see that interview in video form, you can go to themmareport.com to watch my interview with Adam Milstead, trying to do much more video content in 2017 on themmareport.com. But, you know, just an odd matchup of two rising heavyweights, as you know, you've got Adam Milstead, you know, a smaller heavyweight, you know, and then you got Curtis Blaydes, a bigger heavyweight, and I think that you're probably going to see in that fight Curtis try to use his wrestling, use his size to get Adam to the ground, where Adam tries to keep that fight on the feet. But you know, when it comes to heavyweight and prospects, you never really think that for the UFC to kind of match those guys together, but that's exactly what the UFC is doing here. But of course, I will have a preview podcast for this fight card coming up on Friday. That's myself and Daniel Calvon are going to break it down. Diz Ramirez and the Korean Zombie. If you're going to tune in live on Saturday night, that is exactly the reason to tune in. And, you know, what are we going to see out of Chan Sung Jung? I don't know. And that's, you know, you always talk about there's things you know going into the fight, but it's the unknowns of you just don't know how a fighter is going to react. And with this being, you know, two plus years since the last time we have seen the Korean Zombie. I mean, this is a guy that was one of the top 145 pounders in Bellator. And of course, taking on Dennis Bermudez here in a big matchup there at 145 pounds, a division that, you know, kind of really is up in air at this point in terms of, you know, with that title, what's going to happen with Jose Aldo. Of course, Dennis enters this fight with back-to-back wins, a decision win over Hani Jason back in August. And prior to that, he got a decision win over Kawajiri. Of course, prior to that, he dropped fights to Ricardo Lamas and Jeremy Stevens, so we'll see how well he bounces back here. But, of course, Chan Sung Jung, as I mentioned, the first fight in over 2 years. The last time we saw, it's actually 2013 is the last time we saw him. It's crazy. I mean, he was had this mandatory 2 years of military service that he had to do there. So you're talking all the way back August 3rd, 2013, the last time we saw Jose Aldo. Last time we saw Chan Sung Jung. So really interested to see in that matchup there between those two 145-pounders. Also interested that Jessica Andrade and Angela Hill, I really do believe a win, but for Jessica Andrade here, probably likely we'll lock up a title matchup for her against Ioana Jędrzejczyk, and probably the other fight, Oven St. Preux and Volkan Ozdemir. You know, Volkan coming in here on short notice, was supposed to be fighting for the Titan FC heavyweight title a couple of weeks ago. And I remember when I talked to him, and we had him here on this podcast, mentioned walked around at about 240 pounds. So he had about 2.5 weeks to cut down. So we'll see if he can make 205 pounds. I mean, that's part of the battle here with Volkan Ozdemir, is a battle with the scale and whether he can do that there. So, look, it's not the flashiest of UFC fight cards top to bottom, but just as a fight fan, and I'll be tuning in on Saturday night, you just hope that the fights ultimately deliver. Of course, this is a Super Bowl weekend, Atlanta Falcons and the New England Patriots. As for me, with the Tampa Bay Buccaneers not involved, I just hope to sit on my couch on Sunday and see an entertaining game. But since the Atlanta Falcons are in the Bucs division, I know a lot of people that work for the Atlanta Falcons organization. So good luck to all those. But at the end of the day, you just as a football fan, I'm just hoping for an exciting game. It should be. Who knows? Maybe it's a high-scoring game. Both offenses very, very dynamic. But on Sunday, just like pretty much everyone else in the United States, I will be watching the Super Bowl, and for me, that means the countdown to the 2017 season pretty much starts there on Monday morning. So hopefully it's a good game, and hopefully we get some good commercials there for Super Bowl 51 in Houston. As it's amazing. 51 Super Bowls, 52 next year. So be looking forward to watching that one. But on Saturday night, I will be watching UFC Fight Night 104. There's not a ton of notable MMA promotions having fight cards this weekend, but one of those notable promotions is Tachi Palace. Tachi Palace Fights 30 coming up on Thursday night. This is a card that you can watch on SureDog.com. And over the past couple of days or so, I've had a chance to talk to two fighters that are going to be on that fight card. First up, I'm going to let you hear from Alex Perez. He is going to be on this fight card. He is naturally, for the most part, a 125-pound fighter. However, he is going up to 135 in this fight card and basically just looking to get some fight action. So I had a chance to talk to him about what's been going on with him, a fighter that is 12-2 in his last 14 fights. So I talked to him just about his career overall to this point, and also talked to him a little bit about his fight taking place on Thursday night at Tachi Palace Fights 30. Joining me now here on the MMA Report on Radio Influence, man, it's going to be fighting on Thursday night, Tachi Palace Fights 30, as he is going to look for his 16th professional victory. It is Alex Perez, who is 12-2 in his last 14 fights. Alex, I appreciate the time. How are preparations going here for Tachi Palace Fights 30?
They're going good. Just stay on top of my weight, grinding this camp out like always, and just looking forward to fighting already.
Of course, we're talking here on Monday afternoon. Of course, this fight's on Thursday. So what's the next couple of days like for you?
They're not too bad. My weight's good. I'm actually going up a weight class for this fight. My weight's good. Still stuck to the same routine I usually do if I'm making 25s. Just pretty much still eating. Tomorrow I'll start cutting weight tomorrow night, make weight on Wednesday morning. Basically, my training's done, maybe pad work, maybe some drills, and that's about it.
Going up
hard and crazy.
Going up a weight class for this fight, was it more just about, getting some cage time and collecting another paycheck?
No, it was more about obviously getting, getting the cage time, but it was a lot about having fun this camp, making 25s can be hard for me. So kind of told coach, like, hey, I want to do a fight at 35s to just have, I want to have fun. My whole training camp, usually when I cut down 25s, a big part of it is the diet part. I was like, I'll still eat clean, do what I have to do, but I just want to be able to have fun during training camp, not really stress about my weight. And he said, yeah, for this one, let's do it. And, we'll see how it goes.
Do you think long-term that your future's more at 35 than it is 25?
Eventually, yeah. Like I said, I'm pretty big as a 25-pounder. I might not be like the buffest guy at 25, but I'm probably one of the taller ones. I'm 5'7". making 125s is kind of hard. 35s, I'm like an okay size, I guess, like an average size 35er. Some people say I might be a little small, 35s, but it's still a fight at the end of the day.
You've been around this game for some time. What brought you to MMA?
Well, I started off by helping one of my friends get ready for a fight. You know, I was still in high school, just wrestling. He asked me, hey, you know, do you want to come in to wrestle? I was like, all right, you know, we have a team back home called Team Ochoa. And, yeah, come in and wrestle with me, you know, and started wrestling. And I think I was a junior. And I talked to one of my friends about it. And, he was one of my good friends. He's still one of my good friends. He told me, focus on wrestling first and then MMA after. MMA will be there. You know, your wrestling career, it's only so long. So I ended up just helping those guys for a few camps. And then my senior year, started hitting pads and stuff, and took my first amateur fight my first year in college. And then from there, just took off.
What do you remember the most about your first amateur fight?
Being nervous. I mean, wrestling prepares you for a lot of things. One, I think it helps you deal with being in the spotlight, you know, being one, it's a one-on-one, not, you know, you don't have a team behind you. So you can't really, you know, everybody's eyes are on you. But being nervous about getting punched, I mean, I always like hitting people, you know, but I really didn't like getting hit back. So, and then, that was my biggest memory of my first fight, just being nervous walking out there.
Do you still get butterflies every time you're getting ready to make that walk to the cage?
Yeah. I think, you know, if you're not nervous, at least a little bit, I think it's kind of bad. But I get a little nervous, you know. But I know I put in the hard work, and at the end, you know, it's gonna pay off. So I try, you know, that's the biggest thing in the back of my head. But I do get nervous.
They always talk about adversity, that at some point in your career you go through adversity. You know, you've had, you know, four fights not go your way. Is that the biggest adversity you've had to deal with, is just bouncing back from those fights?
Yeah, in the public eye, yeah. You know, like I lost two early back-to-back in my career, and then, you know, I won 10 straight, and then I ended up winning the Tachi title, and then I ended up losing it. My first defense, you know, the fight was going my way. I took a shot, got caught in a guillotine. And second fight, I lost that fight, and I came back again after a really bad back injury, kind of forced myself back in there, and ended up losing again. And I think the hardest part is to afterwards just kind of thinking like, man, is this really for me? You know, that's the biggest one in the public eye. But I've gone through some things like, oh, you know, messed up knee, messed up, you know, hand, or, you know, some type of injury before, into a fight.
They always talk about, you go into a fight, you're going to have, you know, you're going to be banged up. You know, no guy's going in there 100%. But, you know, what would make you decide whether to pull out of a fight or not? You know, I mean, obviously everyone goes in hurt, but is it just basically when you say, I'm injured and this just isn't the best thing for me?
So there's two different things I like to believe in. One is you're hurt, and one is that you're injured. One, you're hurt, you know, you take a day or two off, you're good to go. One, you're injured, like, you injured your back, or you injured your hand is broken, or you tear something you need, then I think, you know, when you're injured, I think you should pull out. When you're hurt, I think you got to fight through adversity. I think a lot of amateurs nowadays do not take, the right steps. I think they pull out if they're hurt in some fights. And I think it's kind of bad, or if they got a cold or something, I think they pull out, you know. And I think that you need to learn how to fight like that at the amateur level. So when, you know, money's on the line, or a UFC contract's on the line, or a belt's on the line, you don't have to pull out. You've been through there before. You know you can do it. I think it's good. I think it's good to get that.
Have you ever experienced a crazy story where, you know, like, say you show up to the weigh-in and all of a sudden your opponent's not there?
No, but I did have a guy show up. We were supposed to fight at 35, and then we ended up fighting at 55. The guy, you know, the guy's from locally from where I'm from. you know, talked a lot, you know, after the fight. And I was like, okay. So I took the fight, and it was like 35. You know, he is like, oh, I'm only like, you know, 145, easy cut. He shows up to weigh-ins like at 149. So like, would you move up to 45? Like, sure. You know, whatever. I don't care. And then he comes back. They're like, okay, try to cut the weight. He comes back, and he's actually heavier than he first weighed in, and we end up finding out 55. So yeah, that was a crazy story happening.
It's some of those crazy stories you hear on the regional scene. But I know before we started recording the interview, you were talking about kind of that your mindset as a fighter. Look, it's about me. You know, it's me going in there and being who I am. It is, you know, in terms of when you're facing an opponent where you're just relying on your coaches to give you that information, is it one of those things that in the back of your head just makes sure it allows you to rely on what you want to do as opposed to maybe having a defensive mindset of being too worried about your opponent?
I mean, usually I let my coaches look at the name. They figure everything out. My manager talks to them, figures out, hey, this is the guy we're fighting. Coach says, okay. And, you know, they'll tell me the name. I'll forget it within the next 10 minutes. And then they just tell me the game plan. Like, you know, everybody's dangerous. Everybody has something they're good at. I just let them tell me, like, hey, you know, we can do this, this, and this, but watch out for this, you know. So, it's kind of like I still have a game plan intact. I just don't like psyching myself out, looking at it, and you know, and making a big deal out of nothing. Where my coach is like, "Hey, your opponent does this really good. Let's work on countering this, or let's work on, you know, stopping this shot, or work on something." I let them tell me what to do, and I just listen. I just like, okay, you know, focus on me, but also, I just don't like to psych myself out.
One of the questions I always like to ask, you know, fighters, so it's the first time coming on our podcast, is what would you want my listeners to know about you, not just as a fighter, but also as a person?
Man, well, people don't know about me. That's kind of hard. Something that people should know about me, probably that I love to coach wrestling. I coached it, you know, I started coaching when I was in high school. You know, I never like thought I was going to take it too serious, you know, just helping people out. And then once I got out of high school, started coaching my nephew. And then from there, you know, I graduated high school, started wrestling in junior college, and then started coaching a high school. Stepped away from that for a little bit to start fighting, and then was coaching on the side. And, you know, I love coaching. It's a different feeling, and I can't explain, but I love coaching. You know, I've worked with the youth all the way up to college guys and MMA people, you know, all over. I just like coaching. I like being around the environment.
How does coaching wrestling make you a better fighter?
I think coaching in general just makes you better at whatever you do. Makes you breaks things down in your mind. You know, for example, if I'm shooting a double leg and, you know, you snap the guy down, take a good shot, and your back's all hunched over, but the right techniques, snap a guy down, you come in back straight, head up, and you're supposed to drive, but you're doing it the wrong way. You can visually correct yourself and also show someone else how to do it. I think it helps with the muscle memory. So I think coaching anything you do, it doesn't have to be just be fighting, wrestling, whatever you do. I think it helps you become a better athlete or better competitor.
And, of course, this fight coming up on Thursday night, Tachi Palace Fights 30. Alex, I really appreciate time talking here during fight week, and good luck here on Thursday night, man.
Cool, man. Thank you. I appreciate it for having me.
All right, man. Talk to you soon. Bye.
All right, man. Bye.
And that was my conversation with Alex Perez, going to be a part of this Tachi Palace Fights card coming up on Thursday night. Someone definitely to keep an eye out for. They're at 125 pounds, but taking this fight here at 135 pounds. So good luck to him. Of course, also on this Tachi Palace fight card will be a fighter that's going to be making his second pro fight, Anthony Castrojone. As I had a chance to talk to Anthony, Anthony has made that transition from Muay Thai to MMA. And by the way, speaking of Muay Thai, you got Lion Fights coming up on Friday night on Access TV. But I had a chance to catch up with Anthony late last week and talk to him about his matchup coming here at Tachi Palace Fights 30. Joining me now here on the MMA Report is a man that's going to be fighting here. Coming up, Tachi Palace Fights 30 coming up on February 2nd. That's a Thursday night. Of course, you can catch these fight card online. It is Anthony Pretty Boy Castrihone who is going to be on this fight card. Second MMA professional matchup. You come over from the Muay Thai kickboxing world. First up, what led to that decision to decide that it was time to make that transition over to MMA?
Just try different waters, I want to get my feet wet in different things, I've been having fun Thai fighting for all these years, but MMA is where the money's at and all the big exposure, so, mm-hmm. I feel like I can stand with all these guys, no problem.
When did you first get involved in Muay Thai?
I got involved in Muay Thai when I was about 13 years old.
What drew you to Muay Thai? Was it, just something you wanted to try out and you ended up falling in love with it?
No, my brother actually got involved in it when we were real young. So there was a gym right down the street. One Kicks was right down the street, and I walked in there one day, and I just fell in love.
Was it one of those things, first day, you just realized you loved it?
Yeah, I walked in, and I was hooked. It was like a drug. I tried it that one time, and I just couldn't get enough of it.
And that pro debut took place back at RFA 42, a knockout in less than 90 seconds. Obviously not a long fight, so there's not too much you can, really break down that fight. But when you think about your performance in that fight, is it one of those things? Was it an A-plus type performance for yourself?
No, it definitely wasn't A-plus. A few little errors I made early in the fight, but, we capitalized on the mistakes we made. So this one's going to definitely be a better turnout. But I'm so pleased with the performance,
Mm-hmm. When you go back and look at that fight, is it one of those things that you're more looking at the negatives as opposed to the positives?
Oh, of course, because I made a few mistakes that I shouldn't have made that early. I could have ended the fight a lot earlier if I wanted to have,
Coming into MMA with the stand-up pedigree that you do have, a lot of people, is it one of those things that you pretty much expect that every fighter that steps into the ring or cage with you in an MMA fight is immediately just going to try to get you to the ground?
Yeah, I don't expect a lot of guys to want to stand and bang with me, I expect a lot of guys to want to get it to the ground real quick, but I got something for them down there too.
Is it almost one of those things where you would really just ideally hope that no one's able to see your ground game for a long time, because then it kind of becomes this like big question mark of, well, is he good on the ground? We don't know. Is it in an ideal world, is that kind of like, I'd love to get like five or six fights in and really no one has a clue what I'm like on the ground.
Oh, definitely. I'd like to keep them all in can he do anything down there, or like a mystery, So we'll see. I plan on keeping it that way for a long time.
Your opponent here, Eugene, he only has one professional fight. He dropped a split decision at Bellator 148 beginning of last year. But, in terms of his abilities, what you think, I don't know if you had a chance to even see any of his tape because it was an unaired prelim, so video may not be out there. Is your expectations are that, most likely he's not going to stand with me and he's going to try to get this fight to the ground?
Yeah, I'm sure he's going to want to go right for the wrestling because it's what he's known for. He likes to pretend like he's going to stand and be real good on the feet, and he goes right for the takedowns. So I'm expecting him to try to take me right to the ground. I know he doesn't want to stand with me.
In terms of, obviously, you have the great striking. How much of your training is it a balancing act of part of your training is, the stand-up game, and the other part's the ground game? Is it a kind of a 50-50 thing for you?
No, not really. I actually teach stand-up, so I do stand up all day. I can do stand up in my sleep. So I've been balancing a lot more groundwork for this fight, going to Joe Soto's and training, having them come over here and having wrestlers come in. So I've been doing a lot more groundwork than stand up actually.
In terms of, obviously, people would know Joe, in terms of what he has done throughout his MMA career, is there anything you have taken from him and his gym that really sticks with you? Maybe it's more about the mental side of the game as opposed to the physical?
Yeah, a lot of his mental ability. He's real mind strong. Once he gets you somewhere, he's gonna keep you there, and he'll try to break you. So it's all about not quitting. And Joe will make somebody quit for sure. I've seen it firsthand. So definitely.
We hear that term in the fight game all the time of mentally breaking your opponent. They'll say, you know what, at some point during the fight, I'm going to break him down. How do you know exactly in a fight when you have mentally broke your opponent?
Oh, you can see it in their eyes. You can see the quit in them.
And when you see that, is it immediately like, okay, full board, go for it? Or do you still kind of have to pick your shots and making sure that, you know, you're not being too reckless in there?
Well, yeah, you still got to be smart about it, because if you go wild abandonment, that's when you get caught. That's when mistakes are made. So you still got to be real technically sound about it.
How do you work on being a smart fighter?
Every day, man. It's just about not getting hit. Putting that hit gear on and not getting hit. I just try to hit and not get hit. It's always been a theory, you know? Mm-hmm. A lot of moving. Object in motion stays in motion, so not to sit in front of my opponent, be a punch bag.
You know, they talk about there's that very thin line of you want to be that exciting fighter, because that's what promoters want. They want, you know, fighters can go out there and put on exciting fights, but you also want to go out there and put yourself in the best position to succeed. And, you know, sometimes you got to be a counter striker, and some fans may not necessarily like that. How do you cross that line of being exciting, but also putting in what you want to do inside the cage?
It's just following the game plan. If you follow the game plan well, you know, you'll be exciting and get the knockout. You just have to stick to what's working.
In terms of fighting, your life outside of fighting, is there a daytime job?
Well, actually, I teach at One Kicks Gym out here in Visalia. We have a kids program, a women's class, a regular schedule. We have a full stable of fighters. So I'm relatively busy here. If I'm not training myself, I'm training somebody else.
What do you learn about the fight game by training someone? I've talked to other, you know, fighters who do the same thing, and they say that you understand that how important the fundamentals are in terms of the fight game. For you, what's your biggest takeaway when you're coaching somebody?
The fundamentals are key. You got to stick to the basics. Basics win fights. Guys that try to, you know, do all this fancy stuff are usually guys that get broken down and get caught because they're trying too hard. Stick to the basics and the fundamentals, and That's where all the top champions in Muay Thai or boxing are. Look at Mayweather. Look at Yasin Clyde Fairtex for Muay Thai. Look at all the top guys. They're all really basic fighters.
And it comes to this fight, how do you see yourself getting the victory?
I don't plan on going three rounds. I plan on finishing Gene.
And, of course, this is going to come up on Thursday night, February 2nd, Tachi Palace Fights 30. You'll be able to see Anthony fight on this fight card. Anthony, and where my listeners can follow you out on social media?
Yeah, follow me on Instagram, follow me on Twitter. You can get me on Facebook under Ant the Pretty Boy for Instagram and Twitter.
Who gave you the nickname Pretty Boy?
Actually, Dewey Cooper gave it to me, the Black Cobra back in Vegas, K-1 legend. I was actually a cutie pie before I was a pretty boy, because I was young when I started. When I was like 13, they used to call me cutie pie. And I started knocking out grown men, and they're like, yeah, you're a pretty boy. Now you're not cutie no more.
Did you hate that nickname?
A little bit when I was younger, yeah. You know, I was like, damn, I'm not a little cutie pie, man. I'm a killer in here.
And of course, now it's pretty boy. Anthony, I appreciate the time. Good luck here at Tachi Palace Fights 30.
Awesome. Thank you, man. I appreciate the interview.
And if you're looking to catch that Tachi Palace fight cards on Thursday night, SureDog.com is the place to go for that one. And I appreciate Castrojone and Perez giving me some time to talk to me about their fights. And you can watch my video interview with Castrojone on the MMAReport.com. Also on the MMA Report YouTube channel. Subscribe to the MMA Report on YouTube to get all of the interviews that I do conduct, or majority of the interviews you will hear right here on the MMA Report podcast. But there's interviews that are exclusive to the MMAReport.com, a part of the MMA Report podcast extra that you can check out there on the MMA Report YouTube channel and also on the MMAReport.com. Of course, if you're not subscribing to this podcast, go ahead and do that right now. Hit that subscribe button on iTunes and Stitcher. And while you're there, rate and review the podcast. Let other people know how much you enjoy this podcast. You know, really the best form of getting the word out about this podcast is spreading around friends. And I really appreciate everyone that, you know, tells their friends here about the MMA Report podcast. And also be sure to check out all the shows on RadioInfluence.com. We got a lot of great programming debuting this week. Ian Beckles, who I worked with in terrestrial radio, he has joined the Radio Influence family. Also, Chef Brian Duffy, who you've seen on Bar Rescue and the Today Show. He has joined the Radio Influence lineup, so a lot of great content coming here to the MMAReport.com. But right now I'm going to play you an interview that I did with Andres Quintana. He's got a matchup coming here at Combat Days Americas on February the 16th. Had a chance to talk to him about his matchup later on this month. Joining me now here on the MMA Report is a man that's going to be set to step in the Combate Americas cage coming up here February 16th in Burbank, California, Andres the Bullet Quintana. Andres, I appreciate time. Last time we talked, you had a fight there at Hard Knocks. You're going up to Canada. You get up to Canada, and then the fight doesn't happen. Kind of talk to me about that entire situation.
Yeah, man, I mean, the fight didn't happen because the guy came in, what, I think 7 pounds overweight. So, I mean, that's a ton of weight for a title fight, especially, you know. I mean, I came in, I was ready to make weight and everything, and they come in about an hour out. They're all like, you should stop cutting weight. I was like, why? I'm like, almost there, you know. And then they tell me, oh, well, your guy's not going to make weight. I was like, how much, you know. And then we jump on the scales, and he's 7 over. So, I mean, nah, we're not going to take it, you know. Well, I was in discussion with my coach and everything. Of course, I wanted to fight, but he's like, nah, that's too much weight.
You know, I know part of it's got to be about getting paid. You know, you get paid to fight. So how does that go into the equation of whether you take the fight or not?
I should have gotten paid because I went and did my job, but, I mean, they didn't pay me a dollar, you know, so. I went up there, spent money, you know. I even had to pay for my own taxi back to the airport. They even threatened to cancel my my flight back to the States. But I told them, do what you got to do.
I guess that's just the, unfortunately, the crappy side of MMA. But you got this fight coming up here, Combates America. You know, first off, what led you to decide that they were a promotion that you wanted to fight for?
You know, they reached out to me. They've been treating me very well, paying me good, you know, so... I mean, you know, give them a shot.
Paying well, as always, will definitely get you to the table to sign that contract. And, you know, first fight since May of last year, we talked about that last time we talked about, you know, looking to bounce back. But in terms of preparations for this fight as opposed to the preparations for the fight you're supposed to have in Canada, how are they different?
I mean, I'm always going in well prepared. No matter who I'm fighting, I'm out there to, you know, showcase my skills, and I'm not too worried about what my opponent's going to do.
Obviously, you have to, you know, you want to, you know, as you mentioned, it's about what you're going to do, not your opponent's going to do. But, you know, you're going to be aware of what your opponent's abilities are. Stylistically, is this a much different matchup for you?
Somewhat. I mean, this guy probably has a little bit better stand-up, but I feel like I'm top of the food chain there. And, I mean, he likes rear naked chokes, so. You know, just specific stuff, specifics.
Is it, you know, how much of, you know, they always talk about, you know, sometimes in your camp, it's about those bad spots and how do you get out of the bad spots? In generally speaking, not just for this fight, but generally speaking, how much of your camp is about just preparing for bad spots that could end up happening in a fight?
I mean, that's a big part, you know, it's a big chunk. We always go look tape if there's footage available, and then, you know, we dissect from there and, you know, see where I'm weak at against my opponent's strengths, you know. So I'm well-versed against this guy. I think he's going to choke me, but I don't see it happening. I don't even see it going to the ground, honestly.
You know, as you think about the mental preparations for a fight, for you, you know, 12 fights into your pro career, how has the mental side of the game changed for you, say, maybe even a year ago to now?
You know, I do a lot of studying. I do a lot of reading, a lot of mind stuff, you know. I feel like, you know, I just got to focus on my fight. And for this camp, I deleted Snapchat and Facebook and all that crap, you know, just so I could be more focused, you know, and just you know, have one goal in mind, and that's win this fight.
Is it tough at all to kind of separate yourself from social media when you're preparing for a fight?
Not too much, just because of... all the preparation, all the hard work I've been putting in. So, I mean, that's like the last thing on my mind.
You know, when you start thinking about this fight, you know, what comes to your mind? Is it just more about implementing your own game plan? Is there anything in particular that always comes to mind?
You know, just go put hands on him and wait till he falls. That's it.
You mentioned about, you know, reading. And I had another fighter recently tell me about that. That's how they work on the mental side, just... you know, reading a book. For you, is there anything in particular you're reading during this camp?
I've been reading Mind Gym a lot. mind control stuff, just different stuff, you know. A lot of recommendations from fellow fighters.
Were you a big reader growing up?
Yeah, I mean, not a huge reader, but I enjoyed reading in high school. Yeah, I liked English class.
I was never a big reader. I was never, and still to this day, I'm still not.
Yeah. I mean, I enjoy it. I mean, just takes you out of your own world for a little bit, at least.
You know, obviously during camp, there's not much of a social life or hobbies you can do. But when you're outside of camp, what are some of the things that you like to do just to kind of let loose and have fun?
I have a Fox Body Mustang. I like racing cars, four-wheelers, skiing, snowboarding. I do, you know, adrenaline stuff, yeah. Something kind of particular of a fighter, I guess. I'm not too laid back. Get bored kind of easy, so I've always got to get my adrenaline pumping.
Being an adrenaline junkie, did that ultimately lead you to combat sports?
I guess you can say so. Also, just me not liking team sports, I always wanted to depend on myself more than anything.
But would you say that MMA, I mean, obviously it's an individual sport because you're the one going inside that cage on fight night, and you've got another man in the cage that wants to beat you, but don't you almost kind of consider that this is kind of a team sport?
Oh, of course, but like in football, if you know, you play your position perfectly and someone else messes up, I mean, then you still can possibly lose the game. So, but I'm the only one that has control over that in the fight. But I agree, MMA is a team sport. I mean, everyone's there to help you and prepare you. But once you step in that cage, you are kind of by yourself.
Being out in New Mexico, you know what are some of the maybe different styles of training you get out there that maybe you couldn't get in other regions of the United States?
Biggest part probably is elevation, and you know, my head coach Chris Luttrell, he's been all over the world and he's learned different martial arts and he's brought back bits and pieces, and he was the founder of Jackson's, and so just to learn from him is an honor.
You know, is there anything that he has said to you in preparations for this fight that has really stuck to you?
I mean, he feels like this guy's not even on my level. I should be able to go in there and beat him in every aspect of the game, and I completely agree.
When you're fighting somebody that you truly believe is not on your level, how do you make sure that it doesn't kind of get to your head to where, you know, you maybe don't give the opponent the respect he deserves?
I always do. I go in there like I'm fighting the world champ, you know. It's my career, you know. If I go in there and underestimate him, you know, it might bite me in the ass.
Anything that you want to prove to yourself in this fight?
Not much. I mean, I've proven to myself everything I've wanted to see over and over, you know, day in and day out in the gym. I just want to go, be entertaining, and, you know, put on a show, get paid, cash some checks.
Entertaining but fighting smart can be a pretty thin line. How do you balance that line?
I don't really balance it. I mean, I basically just listen to my corner and do what I got to do.
I was talking to a fighter the other day, says, you know, sometimes your ego can get the best of you because, you know, sometimes you want to go, you know, you hear those fans or people there supporting you, and maybe you put yourself in a bad situation. Is that anything that you've ever had to deal with on fight night where maybe even in the fight you're like, oh my God, I'm skating a line I don't need to be skating?
Not too much. You know, I'm pretty level-headed. I'm able to tune out the crowd for the most part. And basically all I hear is, you know, my coaches. And so, I mean, Coach Charles, you know, very well experienced. He's been, you know, in UFC title fights and been all over the world coaching. So I trust him completely.
And, of course, this fight's going to go down February 16th in Burbank, California, Combates America, which here in the United States you can watch on UFCFightPass.com. Andres going to take on Eric Sanchez. Andres, I appreciate your time and good luck here at Combates America.
Thank you, man. Appreciate it.
Very interesting stuff there from Andres Quintana. The beginning of that interview is about Hard Knocks and the issues that happened with him. And you makes you wonder, when managers hear that type of conversations, will a fighter that's not from Canada fight for Hard Knocks? I don't know. But some damaging information there about Hard Knocks, but also talking about
Combate's America. And everyone that fights for Combate's America, they rave about how well they're treated there, and we'll see what happens there. But good luck to Andres Quintana later on this month as he's going to take on Eric Sanchez at Combate's America. So I want to thank Mike Russell, Adam Milstead, Andres Quintana, Anthony Castrojoni, and Alex Perez, all coming on this week's edition of the MMA Report podcast. Of course, we're always trying to bring you interviews. If there's anybody you ever want to hear on this podcast, just shoot me a tweet at Jason_Floyd, and I'll do what I can to get that fighter or MMA personality on this podcast, as always looking to tell some of those stories that are out there, not just of fighters in the UFC and Bellator, but guys that are working their way up the regional scene. As of course, this weekend a little bit of a light weekend in terms of MMA. Thursday you do have Tachi, Saturday you do have UFC Fight Night 104, and if you're looking to check out some Muay Thai on Friday night, you've got Lion Fight on Access TV. Of course, we had Anthony Njikuani on the podcast last week, which, along with he talked about his matchup there at Lion Fight, said that, hey, part of his goal is his days in MMA are not done. And, a goal of his is to fight on the same Bellator card as his brother. Said, hey, I'll do kickboxing, I'll do MMA, but, made it clear his days in MMA are not over. So we'll see what happens with Njikuani. Things have not gone his way inside the MMA cage his last five fights. But, of course, his brother coming off that win against Melvin Gillard, a fight that, did not see that fight going that way. I don't think anyone saw that fight going that way, but Chidi did get the win there, and we'll see what happens with Melvin Gillard. Does Bellator keep him around, or do we see Melvin start? Does he fight on that regional scene? Maybe he fights in Louisiana, maybe he fights in Texas. Who knows what's going to happen there with Melvin Gillard? Of course, wanting to go at 170 pounds, but that was a fight where it looked like you had a middleweight fight and a lightweight. It just two guys in two different weight classes, but we'll see what ultimately happens there with Melvin Gillard. Of course, Bellator still a couple more weeks away till their next fight card, Bellator 172. Of course, headlined by Fedor Emelianenko and Matt Mitrione. I would expect that it's going to do well in the television ratings. By the way, speaking of television ratings, should mention the television ratings for UFC on Fox 23. The updated television numbers came in on Tuesday, and the fight card did peak at 3 million viewers during that main event between Valentina Shevchenko and Juliana Pena. Overall, the fight card averaged 2.189 million viewers. And when it came to the preliminary card, averaged 619,000 viewers. And the post-fight show on FS2 came with 75,000 viewers. And that same post-fight show was re-aired on FS1 at midnight on Saturday night. It came in with 128,000 viewers. Of course, the UFC does return this weekend to Fox Sports and FS1 for UFC Fight Night 104. John Anik and Brian Stann will be calling those fights. I love when Brian Stann is calling fights. And really, this past weekend on that Fox card, using that telestrator, and the one thing I love about Brian Stann is he knows how to explain things to the non-MMA fan to where they could understand what's going on. Also, should be noted, the analyst working for FS1 will be Tyrone Woodley and Dominic Cruz. I actually believe they'll be in Houston. I believe that the FS1 is going to have a set there in Houston, of course, Super Bowl weekend. But hopefully it's a good night of fights coming up on Saturday night. But we'll have a preview and a post-fight show for UFC Fight Night 104, so look out for that on RadioInfluence.com. And, of course, if you're not subscribed to this podcast, go ahead and do that on iTunes and Stitcher so you always get this podcast immediately when it comes out. Every Wednesday morning is when the MMA Report podcast does come out. Of course, be sure to give me a follow on Twitter at Jason_Floyd. Follow the MMA Report on Twitter at the MMA Report. Also, be sure to like the MMA Report on Facebook, facebook.com/TheMMAReport. So that's going to wrap it up for this week's edition of the MMA Report podcast, which you always hear every Wednesday on RadioInfluence.com.
Hey guys and gals, this is Ian Beckles. You may know me from my 9 seasons in the NFL or from listening to me in sports radio for years. But now you get to see and hear the real me, uncensored me, and also unfiltered as well on my new podcast, Ian Beckles, Flavor in Your Ear. What's Flavor in Your Ear? I'll tell you what it is. It's a whole lot of fun. Food, fashion, sports, sex, politics, and my personal adventures as well. And a whole lot more food. Make sure to check out Ian Beckles' Flavor in Your Ear each Friday on iTunes, Stitcher, TuneIn Radio, and RadioInfluence.com.